Hello and welcome to Gin and Spooks. I'm Emma.
And I'm Laura.
And what are we drinking today, Laura?
I have got some of my old favourite, the rhubarb and ginger gin with lemonade. What have you got?
Very nice. I have got strawberry and lime Copperberg because I feel too weak to be drinking gin today, apparently.
I have been on the same glass for like 4 hours. So I'm all bigging myself up over here with my hard liquor and it's nuts. It's going down very slowly.
And what are we talking about today, Laura?
Children with past lives.
Ooh.
Ooh. I'm quite excited for this one.
I think I'm trying not to laugh because I just think it's absolutely hilarious. Surprisingly, for someone who believes so much in the supernatural stuff, I think this is utter bullshit.
Do you?
I think it's purely because, like, of the TV series that I've been watching, like, obviously getting the notes for this, it's just, no, it's just utter bollocks.
See, we've been watching the same TV show. Part of me is like, oh my God, this is bollocks. And then there are moments where I'm like, oh my God, how could he have known that? And then it gets to the end and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, but my favorite parts are the bits where it does the overdramatic, zooms in on a ceiling fan, and then it and then it goes stuff like, but Noah's mum never would have imagined what he said next, and then does his own and then does the overdramatic, like, dun dun dun, and then all Noah says is like something that any kid would have just said. It's nothing surprising. It's just like, okay, one of my kids is called Noah, by the way.
I hadn't figured.
So Jim Tucker is a psychiatry professor at the University of Virginia in America. He has studied hundreds of cases where children appear to have lived past lives, and he's actually written a book on it called Return to Life, Extraordinary Cases of Children Who Remember Past Lives. Why am I struggling not to laugh while saying that?
That's a very long name for a book, isn't
it? It really is. It's taken up two lines on my notebook. Anyway, so Jim is following in the footsteps of a guy called Ian Stevenson. He's dead now. But Ian Stevenson spent decades studying children from around the world who could seemingly access memories from another person's life. Between them, they have compiled over 2,500 cases. And in a lot of instances, the person had died rather violently or unexpectedly, leading. So they think that that's like one of the causes why they come back as a child, because they weren't quite expecting to die. And they also say that quite often, the person that the children supposedly were could be identified by some of the information that the children come up with. Apparently, a lot of these memories fade away as the children get older and embrace the life they're in now. Jim Tucker has a theory that the reason why this happens is that because these people die in such a state of shock and they're so scared and it's such a buildup of emotions that and such a surprise that they're not quite ready to die. So their soul just kind of comes back as someone else, like decades later. Yeah, so I don't know if I believe it or not, but let's go. So how do you spot someone?
Okay, so I was just doing like generic research on Google.
Le Googs.
Saw like an essay report kind of thing saying signs you may have lived a past life. So I was like, okay, let's have a read. So one person who is internationally known, hypnotist Scott Schmerin, states, I take my client into a deep hypnotic state and then move them backwards on the timeline of their life. I take them to their birth and then move them through a doorway to a time before the present life. And this is called past life regression and is used by many hypnotherapists.
Ooh.
So could you imagine if like you just saw you being birthed?
That's just weird. And I don't think, like, it's actually possible.
Ew.
I don't want to see that.
So that process is essentially what hypnotherapists do if they believe or they have a client that believes that they've experienced in a past life. So one of the signs is you have persistent memories. So if you've ever heard of someone say that they feel like they were born in the wrong era or century, when someone feels very strongly about it, some psychologists interpret as a possible sign of being connected to a former life. They also might want to check their birth order and what it says about them. Dr. John McGrail, a clinical hypnotherapist, says this characteristic is common among people who may have lived a past life. He describes these feelings as persistent memories or intuitive feelings of being someone else somewhere else at another time. According to McGrail, this can be accompanied by physical manifestation, like a birthmark that, when looked at, invokes a feeling or memory. So, you know, when people have like birthmarks and people say, oh, the birthmark is meant to like represent how you got killed in your previous life. That's essentially what they're saying. So if you look at it, you suddenly get like a flashback or a familiar feeling to something that you've not personally experienced in this life.
Ooh.
Which leads on to the next sign. You have a sense of deja vu, which I have all the time.
But I don't think you have a past life.
No, but that's because my life is very boring and I have a routine because I'm an old woman in a 26-year-old's body. So if you experience deja vu. If you experience deja vu frequently, your previous life may be trying to tell you something.
Oh,
like, give me a sign, bro. Give me a sign.
So nope. you experience it frequently. What do you think it's trying to tell you?
That my life is really boring and I hope the pandemic ends soon.
That's an absolute mood. Like, yeah.
I'm just like deadpan, like, I'm boring.
You said that in the most boring voice as well, like, it's telling me that I'm boring.
I think me personally, sometimes I have a sense of deja vu because I've had a dream about it.
Yeah.
So I've had a dream where, like, I've imagined, like, you know, people that I'm obviously friends with, and I've pictured what they're wearing, and then it seems to happen in real life. I don't know if that's me being really like psychic and predicting my own future.
I mean,
or if it's just, you know, so normal and that's happened before.
Yeah.
I've dreamt about it and then all of a sudden it's happened again.
Unless, I mean, that's such a boring thing to predict. I'm sorry, like, what things I'm people rude. Are wearing.
But it's just like, you know, when like you feel like you're in this, you know, in a situation that you've already been in before, and then your brain clicks and all of a sudden you're just like, wait, what?
Yeah, I'm sure I dreamt this. Yeah.
But maybe my brain is just lagging. Maybe I'm still, I'm like a YouTube video. Yeah,
buffering.
But anyway. Maybe my life is just that fucking boring that I've pictured my own future and it's the same fucking thing this time next week.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, COVID-19.
Hopefully we'll be out soon, but you know.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Yeah,
but this one I found really interesting. So you have unreasonable fears. So
that's me and you all over.
That's what I thought. I was like, oh, me and Laura can relate to this. Do you have any severe fears that just don't make sense? Dr. McGrail has had incredible experiences with patients that do. One woman he worked with developed an intense fear of death just because she looked up at the sky one day.
Sorry, that poor woman.
In hypnotherapy, they did a past life regression and she saw that she had been falsely accused of murder and sentenced to death by hanging. Just before they put the hood over her head, she had looked up at the sky and saw the clouds. After that session, her fear was gone and she went back to her formerly happy life.
I mean, I'm so pleased for her that she's cured her fear of looking up at the sky, but... yeah, I don't know. I don't want to say bullshit, but that's where I'm going.
So, would you like to... So, I picked some weird phobias. So, it provided me with a link, and it was like a long list of weird phobias that people would just think are just completely ridiculous. So, I picked my favourite ones.
Awesome.
So, nomophobia is a fear of being out of mobile phone. So, this is where, like, you can't cope in your daily life without a mobile phone, like you feel like your life's going to end. So somniphobia is the fear of sleep.
Oh, one of my stories, a girl's got a little bit of that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I never looked up the word or anything, but Yeah, anyway.
Okay, so neophobia is the fear of new things and experiences.
That I've kind of got that, but then I also want to go out there and have adventures, but then new things completely terrify me. I don't know.
I mean, it's, like the fear of like new things is like the fear of unknown. Like you've never done it before, so you don't know if you're going to enjoy it or if something bad's going to happen.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So etaxophobia, the fear of disorder. So this is like more extreme. This is like the next level to OCD.
Yeah.
This is like, you know, say you've got crumbs on your keyboard. You just have to hoover it up. So you can't deal with that disorderness. I'm going to try and say this, so don't laugh at me. Hippopotomanstrosesquipedaliophobia is the fear of long words.
That's amazing. Also, if anyone's playing bingo, you've got to do a shot there because she's probably not pronounced that correctly.
No, I'm not even drunk. Like, I just can't read. Apparently,
it sounds like it's a long, tricky word, to be fair. I just want to make people do shots.
Hippopotomanstrosesquipedaliophobia. Yeah, the best I'm going to say right now. Metrophobia is the fear of poetry.
The fear of poetry?
Great. Yeah.
That's really sad. Imagine being scared of poems. Can you imagine you're just at work and someone, and you've got that phobia and someone accidentally says something that rhymes and you're like, is that a poem?
I'd piss myself. I'd actually just start crying out of laughter because I'd just think that's so funny. And then I'd be the most hated person. But I wouldn't care because it's funny.
Yeah.
Phobophobia is the fear of fear itself.
I don't know, it's a very overdramatic gasp then.
You've been watching too much of that TV programme as well.
I have.
That's the end of my weird phobias list. I just really enjoyed that. When I was reading them up, I was like, please, please don't show any spiders. Please, please. But it's not really a weird fear. A phobia, is it? It's a common one. So I was like, don't show me the aliens. Yeah. Don't show me the aliens. I refuse. I refuse to believe that they're just normal. Refuse. Spiders are aliens and no one can change my mind. No one. I like explained it to Scott and he's just looking at me like, you're so weird. And I'm like, they are aliens, okay? You can't tell me anything different because no one knows where they came from. And they just like scuttle around like some fucking weirdo. And I'm just like, oh. And calmly move on. Okay, so next time you get strange pains. This is another sign that I have.
Yeah, me too.
Sometimes I get pains in my arms. I think, oh no, this is how I'm going to go.
I get pains in my boobs quite a lot. Which I think that's just part of being a woman. Yeah, my legs a lot and my knees. My knees do not like being knees. I swear to God, if they could be another body part, they would be.
My knees don't like being knees. Okay, so you get strange pains. So if you've had a physical pain that has bothered you for a decent part of your life, my entire existence. why am I so funny? I don't understand.
I don't know. It's fantastic.
I'm just reading this. It doesn't make any sense. Oh, I'll start that again. So if you've had a physical pain that has bothered you for a decent part of your life, one that doctors don't seem to have an answer for, it could be a result of something that has happened to you in another life. So did I just get crushed by a million rocks or something? Such a random burst of laughter.
I don't know why that made me laugh when you're like, did I just get crushed by a million rocks or something?
Okay. Dr. McGrail thinks having a physical or emotional issue, it can be persistent or suddenly appear as a pain, a fear or a phobia, etc., that has no discernible origin or cause from this lifetime is a sign. Another one is you identify with another culture. A Francophile has an incredible passion for the French way of life and virtually anything French.
I think that one's bullshit, though, because people just like other cultures. Like, just people in France that have like rooms decorated with posters of London on the walls and all sorts of shit. They're just obsessed, just being obsessed with another country or another culture. I suppose if you like, feel like you relate to it, but I still feel like it's just you trying to be cultured or just loving another country's way of life.
100%. Like, I like, you know, Japan's culture.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it's just very fascinating, and it's very like, you know, the social etiquette that they have over there is insane.
Yeah.
I'm so not cultured enough to be able to be ladylike whatsoever in Japanese culture. However, it's just really fascinating, and it's, yeah, you know, completely different to what we have here.
But you don't think you were Japanese in another life, do you? You just think it's cool and interesting.
No.
Exactly.
So if someone is drawn to a certain location or culture, Dr. Schmeren, there's that many may trigger reason to want to explore past life experience. They should seek out a professional who has experience guiding someone through it. They make it sound like it's some fucking trauma.
I know.
Oh my God, I'm really drawn to the Eiffel Tower. I need to go see a therapist about it.
Well, on one of the episodes of The Ghost Inside My Child that I watched, one of the kids was really drawn to a specific location. Now, that's not one of the stories I've picked to do, unfortunately, but it was very interesting. Sorry, carry on.
That's fine. So you have inexplicable skills. The child prodigies astound everyone around them. The question is, do they have the innate talent to master the piano at age 6, or is it more than that?
Ooh.
So the next one is, you have inexplicable knowledge. So several years ago, a story about a child remembering his former life as a World War II pilot made headlines.
Mm.
The boy, James, had intimate knowledge of not just planes, but the name of one of his aircraft carriers and one of his co-pilots. And lastly, you have reoccurring dreams.
Yeah.
So according to Dr. McGrail, reoccurring dreams focused around a given historic period in which you are the same character interacting with the same cast of other characters. And that is the end of this, you know, the signs that you may have lived a past life.
Interesting. And that's interesting because, so out of all of those things you said, I've got in this, I've got examples of randomly having skills that they probably shouldn't have had, and reoccurring dreams. So are we ready to move on to the stories?
We are.
So my first story is about a girl called Kimberly, who is from San Diego, California. Kimberly spent the first 4 days of her life constantly crying. As a newborn baby, a lot of her time should have been spent sleeping, but she just would not sleep. Her mum says that she would sleep for maybe 1 or 2 hours a day at most, nothing more. So she took her to the doctors. The doctor was extremely worried, as sleep is key to development. So he suggested giving her Benadryl to help knock her out. Like literally prescribing Benadryl to a newborn baby.
Knock the fucker out, do it.
Yeah. In the end, in a state of despair, after getting barely any sleep for months, her mum just kind of fell asleep with her in her bed next to her. Kimberly still had difficulty sleeping, but it was greatly improved once she was in the bed with her mum. So she could not sleep alone. And I think it was like that as she was growing up, like the whole way through. It wasn't just as a kid. She had trouble sleeping. She just could not sleep on her own, but it improved slightly when she was with her mum. Kimberly is described as being a very empathetic toddler. She was incredibly tuned into other people's emotions, and her mood mirrored the mood of the room. So if you walked her into a room where everyone was happy and buzzing, she'd have a really happy toddler. If you walked her into a room at a funeral, you'd have an absolutely distraught toddler, just because she felt other people's emotions that strongly. She would get very easily overwhelmed in certain situations where there was a lot going on. So for example, Kimberly had begged her mum to take her to the school fair. But when they actually got there, she had a panic attack and a bit of a meltdown. So they had to leave just because she was so overwhelmed by her surroundings, the amount of people, the amount of noise. She couldn't handle it. Her mum in the end took her to a therapist to teach her some techniques to deal with her intense anxiety about life in general. From the age of about 2.5 years old, she would chatter away constantly while she was playing, as if she was talking to someone. Her mum asked her who she was talking to, and she replied, "I'm talking to my sister, Mama." At this point, she was an only child. As Emma from Real Life Ghost Stories podcast would say, you drop kick her down the stairs. Like, nope. And her mum questioned her further and was like, you don't have a sister. She was like, no, Mama, my sister from when I lived before.
No. Fuck her off. Bye.
Yeah. No, thank you. Take you back. So the doctor waved it off as Kimberly being an incredibly bright girl with an active imagination. But when her mum questioned her further, Kimberly said, her name is Sarah. She likes to come and play with me because she feels sorry. When we lived before, she killed me by pushing me in the fire. But it was an accident and she feels really sorry. I wish I could, like, I wish we were filming this because your face is just amazing. Like, what the fuck?
Get a fucking priest.
Yeah.
Get some sage.
Yep.
Fucking blaze that shit up.
So the fact that Kimberly, who was like, she's just a young kid at the time, but the fact that she provided a name and such a morbid scenario in so much detail made her mum realise that Kimberly couldn't be making it up and she must have had a past life. I mean, yeah. that's the first thing
that you're going to think of.
Yeah, exactly what I was about to say. That's a huge conclusion to jump to. Would you not be ringing up all your friends being like, what shit have you let Kimberly watch when she was at your house? Like, come on. But no.
Yeah, I'd be asking her questions like, okay, so what's made you want to say this?
Yeah.
Have you been watching anything? You know,
yeah.
Horror film?
Maybe they did. Maybe she had questioned Kimberly about that kind of stuff. And we just, but yeah, she's decided that Kimberly had a past life. So when Kimberly started school, her mum was really worried that the lack of sleep and her intense anxiety would hinder her development. And she also worried that if she talked about living before or her sister, she would be seen as weird and wouldn't make any friends. Now, at this point in the documentary that I watched, use the term documentary very loosely, it seems like Kimberly's mum was more concerned about the fact that everyone would think she was fucking weird for talking about living before, not the fact that she didn't get much sleep and she was worried at how well she'd got on at school. It's literally that I'm worried people are going to think my kid is weird.
Let her be weird, man. If that's the path she wants to take, then
yeah.
Let her be weird. Like, she shouldn't, like, reprimand people, you know, people.
Yeah,
for
I mean,
the child for being who she is.
Neither of us have kids, so I feel like we can't fully judge. I mean, I'd be worried that my kid would get bullied maybe if they were really weird.
I mean, that's obviously like a fear of mine as well, if I have kids and they start getting bullied for being weird, because I am weird myself. My kids are 100% gonna be strange. However, if those kids did start bullying my kid, I would not hesitate to drop kick him so fucking far.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even think about coming back.
Exactly.
So, like, try it, bitch.
So Kimberly's mum sat Kimberly down, planning on having like a proper chat with her, like to knock this Sarah and this living before right out. But she asked Kimberly to tell her as much detail about her past life as she could. So Kimberly said that in her past life, she was named Christina and she lived in Liverpool between 1860 and 1870. She lived in a very small house with her mum, called Anna, her dad, who was a merchant, and her brother Thomas and her sister Sarah, of course Sarah. They all slept together in one straw bed because they were poor. So one night when they were all sleeping, the stove set fire to the house. It very quickly went up in flames. Sarah had pushed Christina in an attempt to save her, but had ended up pushing her into the path of a falling beam, which is what killed her. Kimberly's mum thinks this explains why Kimberly didn't want to go to sleep. She was scared of going to sleep because last time she'd been to sleep, a fire had started and she'd died. It also explained why she couldn't sleep alone, because they never used to sleep alone in the house. And it also explained why Sarah was still trying to look after Kimberly, because she obviously felt, this invisible Sarah character obviously felt really guilty that she'd accidentally killed her sister.
Yeah.
So at age 21, Kimberly is still feeling pretty lost. She still struggles with anxiety and anything that relates to growing up or becoming an adult. So she, in that documentary, Kimberly actually uses the example of her high school graduation. She couldn't go to it because she was just so anxious about it. Graduating high school is such a big event in growing up. She just couldn't really do it. She says she no longer sees Sarah as a full apparition anymore, but she can feel that Sarah is always around looking out for her. She feels comforted by her presence. Her mum, however, still thinks that Kimberly's fucking weird and wants her to let go of Sarah so that she can move on with her life and Sarah can also move on and rest or move on to another life somewhere. Again, the mum here was very much seeming like she thinks that this apparition of Sarah is holding her daughter back and really wants her daughter to just get a grip. To me, it sounds like she's still sharing a bed with her daughter. She just wants her 21-year-old daughter to move the fuck on.
Yeah.
in the documentary, you can see them. They go to a peaceful park, they sit on a bench, and they light two candles in between them, one for Kimberly and one for Sarah. And they say a prayer to Saint Anthony. No, they don't say a prayer to Saint Anthony. They say a prayer to Saint Michael. Saint Michael is said to be the saint closest to the angels and the saint who helps to sever ties. So the idea is that they say a prayer to Saint Michael and he will help sever the tie between Sarah and Kimberly. So you see them say the prayer, and once the prayer is done, the candle lit for Sarah has gone out, but the other candle is still lit. And I'm not going to lie, that bit gave me chills because both of these candles were next to each other. They're identical candles. They say the prayer and one of the candles has gone out, this one they specifically lit for Sarah. And then Kimberly's like, I feel so much better. This is her giving me a sign, letting me know that she's okay with moving on and I can move on with her life. And hopefully we'll both go on to better things. And now Kimberly all of a sudden has magically moved into her own place and is studying cosmetology. I mean, good for Kimberly. It's really she's corny. Like,
and now she's moved on and she's happy with me moving on forever.
Yeah.
And ever. Like, why is it so dramatic? I love how dramatic it is, but why is it so dramatic?
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, get a fucking grip of yourself.
Yeah, but poor Kimberly though, because she was obviously struggling with some fucked up anxiety and sleep issues, whether they were caused by a past life or not, who the fuck knows. She probably just had a normal invisible friend as a kid and then made up all this past life stuff and then use that as a crutch, being like, just blamed all her anxiety and stuff on that.
To be honest though, like, obviously I'm not a doctor, so I'm not 100% sure. It does sound like she's a little bit autistic.
This is what I thought when I was watching it, because she was getting so overwhelmed in the social situations, like the fair. She was very bright.
I mean, there is, like, you know, correlations between, you know, autistic children being more creative than just normal functioning children, because obviously it's the way the brain develops.
Yeah.
And obviously in this case, like, because of how much anxiety she had as a kid and being so overwhelmed easily and being quite empathetic, you know, it does sound like she should have just gone to a doctor to get assessed to see if she had any autistic traits, because I guarantee you that's probably what she's got.
Yeah.
But Americans are like a big no-no on that, I feel. Yeah. I feel like they jump to conclusions where conclusions don't necessarily make sense. And in this case, a past life, I wouldn't be thinking that if my daughter was having such a hard time trying to, you know, fit in, or it's, you know, was.
It's so weird because there's almost a stigma around having your child actually, their mental illness or their disability or whatever, there's such a stigma around having that actually being labeled and diagnosed and stuff, so much so that she'd rather just be like, no, my kid's extremely clever, she just had a past life. Like, no.
One of my brothers is actually autistic, so obviously I grew up with it, and he is quite empathetic, and you know, he's more emotional than most people anyway. It's just always important to obviously get it diagnosed earlier rather than later, because it does impact you socially, whether you want it to or not. But yeah, I feel like they should have just at least gone to an actual doctor to get her assessed first before going, let's put her on this documentary and broadcast her that she's weird, even though we don't want her to be weird.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah. So that was Kimberly.
Well, that was fun. The episode that I watched, purely on this main kid named Jamie. He lives in Wisconsin. He basically developed like very big fear of water. They had a pool in the family home, and apparently whenever they used to, like, you know, play around in the pool, his mum would try and get him to go into the pool, and Jamie would never go past the stairs of the pool. And will panic if you got too deep into the water. I think that's completely rational. Yeah. I was quite scared of water when I was younger. My mum taught me to swim in lessons. Still don't know how to swim. However, I'm not scared of water as I was as a kid.
When you had swimming lessons, did they ever make you swim in your pajamas so that you could practice if you were ever on a ferry and it sank for whatever reason, you knew how to swim fully clothed?
Nope.
Right. I feel like there's so many things.
Just a particular experience that you've had.
No, I'm sure it's quite a common thing. I can't remember how old we were. It's primary school, definitely. I feel like as a kid, there are so many things that you learn about that I mentally prepared myself for that I thought were going to happen to me very regularly, like quicksand and being on a boat that breaks so you have to swim in your clothes, and the chip pan catching fire and putting a tea towel on it. No, I don't know if my school is really keen on health and safety or... And I'm just...
Your school was definitely keen on health and safety. I do not remember any of those.
I can remember having to, like, a drawing and of a picture of a kitchen, and you had to circle everything that was like a hazard, like including a pan handle pointing off the counter or a knife not pointy bit down in the dishwasher. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
It's fine. I'm enjoying listening to your growing up experiences.
No wonder I have such bad like anxiety about things when I was literally taught to fear everything. Like, this bad situation might happen to you, watch out. But it's okay, I can swim with my pajamas on.
So essentially he had no negative experiences with water because they were always around water. You know, again, they had a swimming pool in the house, so there was, you know, he was brought up in a very water-friendly environment.
Yeah.
When he was around 3 to 4 years old, he was learning to ride his bike. And apparently, as he was, like, riding the bike, he turned around to his mum and his older sister. And he was like, oh, I've seen my mum ride down the street on her bike.
Mm.
His mum's response was, oh, maybe he's just seen a photo of me. Or, you know, maybe someone's told him that this used to be the same street that I used to ride my bike on. However, there are no actual photos of her riding a bike.
Ooh.
And then he went on to explain that, no, he used to watch her from the window of their house ride the bike.
Ooh.
And it was a blue bike. So his mum was like, all right, this kid's a fucking freak.
Weird.
And his mum used to ride her blue bike on the same street around 5 years old. And apparently he believed that he had already seen her in a weird previous life.
Weird.
So sometimes he would like develop like a speech impediment, and essentially he would start speaking in an English accent. So
has he not just like watched a cartoon that's got an English accent?
Most likely. But they took him to a speech therapist and like to obviously help like with his actual speech in general.
Yeah.
And obviously they explained, oh, you know, he speaks in an English accent. And then he would refuse to say left and right. He would always say port and starboard. And between 4 and 5 years old, he would start having night terrors. So he would start thrashing around in his bed. He would literally jump out of his bed, like still in his sleep state, panicked, looking for a way out, and seemed very distressed.
Poor kid.
Yeah, he was not having a good time.
Mm.
So he would sweat, cry, scream, fly out of bed when he was having these night terrors. And then he would talk about drowning or going under when talking about water.
Oh.
So that was always something he always brought up whenever he mentioned anything in regards to, you know, going to swimming lessons or going to the pool. So at 4 years old, he had a babysitter, and they came back, the parents, and found out they had watched the last half of the Titanic.
Bit intense, which, for a kid that age.
Yeah, they weren't impressed because of how, for a child, you know, it's quite traumatic.
Yeah.
And it's very emotional, and it's not something you should be having a kid watch, to be honest, especially at that young of an age.
Yeah, especially when he's already scared of water.
Yeah, so... After that, he started painting and drawing pictures of the Titanic. So within 2 weeks, he had drawn 50 pictures.
Oh, my God.
He was, like, completely obsessed with the Titanic. He would even draw the Titanic on notebooks whilst he was in school or placemats. He would just keep drawing it over and over again. And his mum and the rest of his family couldn't stop the obsession. It would just, you know, progressively got worse. So one drawing he had done, it was if like he had drawn all the levels of the ship. So it's like if you cut the Titanic in half, he did it by level, as if like he knew the ship inside it now.
Yeah.
He kept focusing on like, you know, that the fact that when the Titanic sank, when it hit the iceberg, that the workers in the boiler room got trapped So, you know, yeah. in the film, like the emergency doors come down to try yeah. and contain the water. He was absolutely devastated that the workers in the boiler room died first, and he acted as if it was his fault.
Oh.
So he talked about the accident, and every time he talked about it, he would always end up crying, saying it shouldn't have happened. So his parents and his older sister thought he was just traumatized by the film, that this is this was his way of dealing with the fact that he watched a film that was so traumatic and emotional. His way of trying to process it.
Yeah, I hope they fight that babysitter.
I would have as well, but like, why are you letting a kid watch that?
Yeah.
So so he would always act like he was responsible for the accident. And he would have so much knowledge about the ship as well, as if he had been on the ship.
Yeah.
When it sank, and it was as if he had built the ship as well. So he's 5 years old at this point, and he's talking about the ship, saying that they used iron instead of steel, and identifying mistakes in the building of the Titanic.
Mm. Weird knowledge for a 5 year old to have.
It is. It is very weird knowledge, because unless they're very like censored in the house, he shouldn't necessarily know about that kind of stuff.
No.
And then obviously when the ship hit that iceberg, the emergency doors trapped the lower level, which is obviously something that shouldn't have happened. So when he drew another picture of the Titanic, you know, he drew 4 smokestacks. So, you know, the chimneys on the ship.
Yeah.
Smoke were only coming out of 3.
Yeah.
Now, his mum questioned why there was only 3 that had smoke coming out of them. And he replied saying that the 4th one was a dummy and it was only for show.
Oh, right.
They only needed 3. But they thought 4 would be better, which, as part of the documentary that was released like years ago, is actually true.
Oh, really? That's such weird knowledge for like a kid to have.
Like, so the reason I picked this story, just to go off topic a little bit, is because I am so obsessed with the Titanic tragedy.
Yeah.
I love it and I hate it because I get so passionate about it. Because when I watched Titanic when it came out in 3D, in the cinemas way back, I actually got really obsessed and I was like, no, if I was the captain of the ship, I'd be able to save more than half of the people that they managed to save.
Yeah.
Because they had less lifeboats on the ship when they shouldn't have.
Yeah.
Obviously, the building of the ship itself, they used the wrong material.
Yeah.
So it was more susceptible to obviously getting damaged. And it talks about, obviously, you know, why they didn't see the iceberg at the time.
Yeah.
So obviously, it's not like whether the moon was like present in the nighttime, and if it was reflected on the iceberg, it would cast it in shadow. So they wouldn't have been able to see, apart from this like big black thing in the distance, until it was too close.
Yeah.
And they were going at a faster speed because they were hoping to make it to New York a day earlier to prove that, you know, it was the greatest ship. So they were going too fast anyway, which is why they ended up crashing into the iceberg.
Yeah. Just a whole series of unfortunate events, that, wasn't it, really? The Titanic.
Yeah. If they had just, you know, taken their time and done what they were meant to do at the beginning when they set off, it wouldn't have sank.
Yeah.
100% it wouldn't have sank.
Yeah.
So because they were so eager to, like, you know, make a statement and get there a day earlier. And then they were, like, adjusting course. It happened, you know. It was just an unfortunate tragedy that happened.
Yeah.
So eventually Jamie ended up buying it. Well, his parents brought a PC game for him of the Titanic, and it's like a simulation. So essentially it's like a mystery simulation where you have to search the ship for, you know, clues to prevent the ship from sinking. So you have to go to the captain's quarters. Now, when he was playing this game in the documentary, it was basically, he was acting as if like he knew exactly where he was going.
Yeah.
Like he just went straight to the captain's quarters, and he always used to say, go port. And he would use, like, you know, the lingo that we'd use on ships. He would always say that when he was playing the simulation. So they just thought it was really strange how like he knew so much about the Titanic.
Yeah.
And obviously from the film, you don't really know that much anyway.
No, because
like, it's a love story.
Not a boat story.
Yeah. So eventually they obviously went to a doctor, and then they came to this, you know, resolution that he was experiencing a past life.
Obviously.
So they believe that he used to be Thomas Andrews. He was the architect for the Titanic.
Uh-huh.
And designed several other ships for the White Star Line. He also went down on the ship, which you see in the film as well.
Yeah.
And apparently Andrews and J.P. Morgan argued about the amount of lifeboats which you also see in the film.
Yeah.
So there's another architect on there who says, no, we don't need that many lifeboats. Andrews ends up arguing that they should have put more lifeboats on to help more people survive.
Yeah.
So they took him to a Titanic exhibit. You know, like most kids, they get a bit bored when you take them to a museum. They're not really bothered. Play with all the kids,
yeah,
etc. He was very fascinated and studied every single piece of like material that was there. And then this is where it got really dramatic, and I just burst out laughing when I was watching the episode. So he had a dream, and his mum calls it the death dream.
The death dream.
The death dream. And it was more of like a dun dun dun.
Yeah.
The episode. It was so funny. So his mom heard a bang consistent on his bedroom door. He was up on all fours. He was staring at the floor, convulsing. Mm. He screamed, she's going down, but he didn't sound like him. Apparently sounded like a man.
Oh, that's actually giving me chills.
Yeah, same. And he just kept screaming, she's going down, she's going down, so loud. And then they assumed that obviously due to them, you know, coming to this conclusion that he was living a past life and he used to be Thomas Andrews, that he was referring to the ship that he was experiencing that moment when he died in his past life.
Oh gosh. Well, I was gonna say, like, I know we're kind of taking the piss out of it a little bit and stuff, but that boy was obviously going through some sort of terror, and that must be absolutely horrendous for him and for the parents to watch. Whether it is actually reliving a past life or not, who knows, but it sounds horrendous.
Oh, 100%. Like, I don't know what I would do if I had a kid and walked in and they were doing that. I'd generally like be like, oh my god, like, what would you do? Like, you won't be able to do anything because you're obviously not allowed to wake them up. You're not allowed to wake anyone, any sleepwalker up, especially like in a night terror, because you're just you do so much damage to them.
How horrendous.
And then after all that, you know, bombshell in the documentary, I love it. At the end, it just kind of skipped and just went, Jamie is now 19 years old and he's at university studying 3D concept and modelling. He's at peace that his previous self sacrificed himself for the greater good.
Oh, I mean, I'm glad he's doing well. But after all of that, it's just like, oh, okay.
You see him and he's a lot older. And he just turns around and he's just like, I'm at very peace. You know, the fact that I've, you know, lived a past life and that he sacrificed himself, you know, to help save more lives because he didn't go on a lifeboat.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was the end of his story.
Was it partly his fault that the boat was not fit for purpose?
I think so, because obviously he was the architect, but obviously there would be, you know, superiors that would have more of a say-so, and he was obviously there to advise, and, you know, he would always go on these ships that he designed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously to make sure that everything went well, and, you know, if anything did happen, he was there to advise and he had that knowledge.
Yeah, yeah. That one's freaky.
That one was quite creepy, but I did enjoy it purely because obviously my fascination with Titanic.
Yeah.
That's why I picked it. I don't know why. It's just really fascinating. And the documentary is also has James Cameron in it, who directed the film.
Yeah.
And he actually went to go see the Titanic, which is one of my all-time things that I want to do.
Yes.
Yeah, you need a lot of money to do it, however. But you're going on like a tiny little submarine. And you go down, but you can't stay there too long because the current is so crushing that you'll die.
It's really deep, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually on the seabed.
Out in the cold, near icebergs.
Yeah, Atlantic Ocean. When I went to, like, years ago, when I went on holiday to Florida, obviously on the plane, it has a pinpoint for the Titanic.
Oh, does it?
I flew over it, yeah.
Oh, cool.
It, like, tells you where the Titanic, like, wreckage is.
Yeah,
and I was like, it's just one of those things I want to go see, and I feel like it'd be so surreal.
To be fair, I'd love to go see that. I'd never even thought about it before, but you've said it. I'm like, yes, I want to do that.
Because they did try and, like, you know, obviously, you know, move it to get it back into their
a museum. Like, probably, shit.
Yeah,
yeah.
But the oxygen would destroy anything that was left remaining because the water somehow managed to preserve some of it.
Yeah,
which is why, you know, you can visit it today.
Oh, but my god, I'm actually thinking about going to visit it now, but you'd be so freaked out, wouldn't you? Just being underwater that deep, looking at this ghost ship, you'd half expect to see like a ghost face or something. Oh, yeah. No, I don't want to go see it, actually. I've changed my mind.
I definitely want to go see it. I don't know why. It's just, I just find it really fascinating, and yeah. I think it would be such an, you know, an emotional experience. You know, when people go to Auschwitz,
yes,
and it's like people are so quiet because it's such an emotional experience. I just feel like that's what the Titanic would be.
Yeah, like I went to see where the Twin Towers were.
Oh yeah,
when I was a teenager in New York. I think they call it Ground Zero. And they, I don't know if they still do, because I want to say they've actually rebuilt buildings there now. But when I went, it was, I'm sure it was still like clear, and they had a museum there and stuff. And there was these, my memory's a little bit patchy, but I'm sure there was these like loads of people had made cranes out of paper, you know, the little origami for, and I'm sure there was one for every single person that had died or something. And there was just so many of them around. Oh. Yeah, and that was a place that was weird. I was only a teenager, and I wasn't that fussed about, you know, when you're a teenager and your parents are dragging you to some museum and you're a bit like,
Yeah.
I was a bit like that. But then I remember just feeling overwhelmingly sad when I was there.
Yeah, because it's just like, it's just such a tragedy as well. Like, so many innocent people have like died.
Yeah.
So there you go. That is awesome. The Jamie story.
I like the Jamie story. So, Elijah is from a town called 96 in North Carolina. Why do American towns have such weird names? They either have weird names or they steal names from other places.
Because they think they're the best.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I love America, because I feel like we've been not negative about Americans, but we've taken the piss a little bit. And I'm sorry to any Americans listening. I love America. However, why is your town called 96? That's a number. Anyway, Elijah is from a town called 96 in North Carolina. When Elijah started crawling, he would always drag one of his legs behind him as if he couldn't use it. His parents took him to the doctor, who checked him out and said there was nothing wrong with his leg. Elijah said, "Shot." The doctor explained that they hadn't given him a shot, because shot is the American word for injection. Took me a few moments when they said that on the TV. I was like, what? So the doctor told him that they hadn't given him a shot, but Elijah responded with, "No, bang, bang," as in bang, bang, shot, leg. Which is an interesting thing to say, because this is when he's crawling. So he's got to be fairly young if he's only crawling, dragging one leg behind him.
When do kids start crawling? It's like, what, 6 months and a year or something?
Well, I was walking by the time I was 11 months. I can't remember. And that was quite young to be walking at 10 or 11 months. So crawling. So as he got older, he was plagued by recurring nightmares and would often phrase things in a really weird way. So, for example, he would often fall over, as toddlers do. You know, they're a bit like unsteady on their feet. But he'd fall over and say, "I fell out of my aeroplane and my pillows didn't open fast enough. You know, the pillows over my head." His family soon realized he meant parachutes. They couldn't work out how their toddler knew what parachutes were or when they'd be used or why he'd even know this word. Bit weird. Also, yeah,
that's a bit strange.
As I was hearing this story, I kept thinking, oh, he must have been like 4 or 5 at this age. But no, they specified that he was a toddler. But like,
so it'd be like 2 to 3.
Yeah, but he was very talkative for a toddler. He would quite often talk about children and how the children with the thing on their shirts were getting hurt. When his parents asked him to draw what he meant, it looked as though he was trying to draw children with a star on their shirts. He drew...
Oh, no.
He drew a lot of concerning pictures. His mum describes his pictures as crazy. So he'd draw things like people hiding in the dark, children lying down, children with stars on their shirts, bodies everywhere, people getting blown up, explosions and other like scenes of war. And apparently he's about age 2 to 3 here. So again, still like toddler, quite a young child.
He's like well developed.
I know, right? Like I feel like they might have been, they must have been exaggerating at how young he is, how young he was throughout all of this. Because I'm sorry, some of the things he's talking about and some of the pictures he's drawing, I don't think a 2 and 3 year old could do it so clearly.
Insane.
He would reenact battles with his action figures, and he would regularly talk about the pain of being shot and having blood running all over him and how the explosion made his ears ring. all sensations and feelings that any kid at that age should not have known about, especially not a kid in a nice town in the USA, which is not known to be war-torn. So on the 4th of July one year, they went to a friend's house to celebrate. When the fireworks started, an expression of pure terror crept across Elijah's face. He shouted, "Incoming," and ran over to his mom, covering her with his arms and body and repeatedly telling her to get her head down. It took both of his parents to calm him down and tell him that there were no bombs, just fireworks. Oh, so I forgot to mention, his dad was in the army and had been serving in Iraq. So as soon as he saw Elijah yell "incoming," he knew exactly what was going through Elijah's head because he's been in the army. So they knew to explain to him that they were not bombs, they were just fireworks. So as a kid, his dad had also had recurring dreams of war, specifically being in a trench with artillery shells falling around him. He believes these dreams came from memories of a past life experience, and he thought Elijah was going through the same thing. Again, very much jumping to conclusions. But his parents were determined to help Elijah. It was obvious he had once been a soldier, but they didn't know which war it was or which nationality he was. And so they wanted to find out.
It was World War II.
Spoiler alert! Yeah, so you can kind of gather that it's probably World War II from those pictures. He was working with flashcards with his older sister, so his sister would obviously hold up a word and as he was learning to read. But every time she held up the word "no," Elijah would say "nine" really confidently. She kept explaining to him that, like, this isn't a number, this is the word "no," and he would, like, nod and be like, "yeah, nine," which obviously is the German word for "no."
I don't know why I'm laughing. I'm just laughing out of nervousness. Like, this kid has got to stop.
To be honest, this one gives me chills a little bit. Anyway, so one night, the family were watching a documentary about World War II on the History Channel when Hitler appeared on a stage talking quite animatedly to a crowd. All of a sudden, Elijah starts laughing hysterically, proper crying with laughter. Well, yeah, his family questioned him about it because they're like, "This is Hitler. Why are you laughing at Hitler? He was such a bad person. It's not okay to be laughing at Hitler." So when they asked him about it, he said, "Oh, mama, he thinks he's beautiful." And he was proper laughing at him. A few seconds later, the translation came up on the screen. Apparently, Hitler had been telling a joke, gesturing and talking about how handsome he was. So this kid had understood.
No.
German. So understanding German like that at such a young age with no exposure to it, you can't make that up. You can't make up understanding German like that, a whole other fucking language.
No, that, I just got shivers down.
Yeah, see, that one, this is giving me chills. So they thought he must have been a German soldier. So they were really determined to figure it out and try and help him. So they took him to a World War II display in an antique shop. He pointed to a dagger with a swastika on it and said, "I had one just like that." At this point in the documentary, I was like, was he a fucking Nazi?
Oh, God.
But he says, he says, "I had one just like that. I took it off a German soldier." I was like, okay. They were watching a movie one day when Elijah heard the name Peter. This seemed to trigger a memory for him, and he told his mum that his name before had not quite been Peter, but it had been something very similar. Now, Peter's like quite a common name over Europe, but each country has its own version of it. So like in Spain, they have Pedro, France, it's Pierre, like
Petra.
Yeah, like all sorts of stuff, all sorts of Peters. Anyway, so they asked him to draw the aeroplane from his memories as best he could. And then they spent ages crawling through photos of World War II planes on the internet, trying to compare them to this picture he drew, until suddenly Elijah exclaimed, "That's it, that's the one." And it was a Russian aeroplane. So not German, Russian. So yeah, Peter, like I said, Peter is quite a common name across Europe and in Russia, with slightly different variants across the countries. Elijah started talking about helping people to safety. He said he'd slip them out and take them to different countries. He would also draw pictures of this. The children were always in a line with him at the front with his gun and a cross on his shirt. They searched the internet for all the trigger words from his memory. So like they were searching for like Russia, underground, people smuggling, World War II, like all that kind of stuff. And they stumbled across this group of people who were called the Russian Partisans. and they were members of a resistance force that fought against Germany in World War II. They were often dropped in by air from the planes that Elijah had identified, and many were intercepted and dropped down. So that bit gave me chills, because he had drawn and identified this specific plane, and it turns out it was those specific planes that were dropping these Russian partisans into Germany to help rescue Jewish people.
Holy shit.
Yeah. After so much research, like, the mum literally said she was scrolling through books and books and books they found at the library of all the people from World War II and Russia and stuff. But they eventually found a man who had been shot down in part of an air assault, as Elijah had previously described as a kid, like his parachute's not opening because he'd been shot down. He had also then gone on to be part of the Russian partisans helping people out of Germany, again, as Elijah has described. His name was Petrovsky, like Peter.
Anyway, I just got chills.
Anyway, so Elijah is now, I think he's a teenager now, and he really likes martial arts, and he definitely does not want to be a soldier.
I completely understand and relate to that.
Yeah, but they also tell the story about how at one point his dad had to go back to war in Iraq, and he knew he was definitely going to be like on the front line in the action zone. And when they told the kids that, rather than being upset, Elijah was like, I need to talk to you man to man. And so they did talk man to man. And the mum said she listened in at the door. And they say that the conversation didn't sound like it was between a son and a father. It sounded like it was between a war veteran and a soldier. And he literally tells his dad, like, when the bombs come, you just need to get down, keep your head down and stay down. And then the dad says, like, he literally arrives on his new base and he's about to have a tour, and all of a sudden shells start dropping on their base. And he just remembers exactly what Elijah has said, gets down to the floor, and he's about to get up and run like to safety in the barracks, but he remembers what Elijah had said and stays down until there's a massive gap in the bombs dropping. And he said that remembering that little bit of like advice from Elijah really like helped keep him calm and keep him safe in that moment when he was actually being bombed. And I was like, whoa, Jesus Christ,
what the fuck, man, that's insane.
Yeah,
wow.
So all of this gave me chills, and I was actually like, okay. But then I felt a bit weirded out when they pulled up this picture of this Colonel Petrovsky, and Elijah was like, yeah, this used to be me in a past life, and they held it up to his face, and I was like, no. Like, it was just a bit weird. Like, I was looking at this Russian, quite respectable man and this boy, and was like, I wonder what Petrovsky would have thought if you told him that he was going to come back as a young American boy.
I don't think he'd be very happy.
I know. It's when you put a face to this person that they supposedly were in a past life, that ruins the illusion for me, I think.
Yeah.
The finding the name and finding the person gives me chills. Pulling the face up just ruins it for me for some reason. I don't know.
It's just, they have to add that like element of like corniness to it, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. And his mum was like, you even look kind of alike. And I was like, no, you don't. I had to put one war story in this.
That definitely gave me some chills. I was like, no, yeah. Stop it. I feel like my second and last story, it's not as exciting, I feel like, in the episode, because it's in the same episode as the Jamie one, and I feel like they just used it as a filler.
Yeah.
Even though they could have quite easily had more content on Jamie because of, like, you know, the topic. Yeah. So Talia lives with two other siblings, her mum and her dad, in San Jose, Costa Rica, and both their parents are painters. So they moved over there, tried to start their own little business up, and they have Talia. And at this point, she starts developing, like, you know, signs that she's had a past life from around 3 years old.
Mm.
So she would get quite morose, always crying to herself. Whenever her parents would ask what was wrong, she'd always go, that old lady, that poor old lady, I can't help her. Every day. Did that every day for about 6 weeks.
Oh, my God. That's freaked me out.
So every so often she would just start having these crying episodes, and then she would start repeating, that poor old lady, I can't help her, etc. Her dad is like fixing something in the other room in the house. He ends up injuring himself, and obviously he verbally says the word ow. She listens and obviously hears him say that, grabs a first aid kit, comes rushing in, starts like you know, cleaning them up and bandaging them up and stuff as if like she's done it before at the age of three. Like,
what the fuck?
Either that's like being very, you know, a 3-year-old who's very prepared for any attack or whatever. Who the fuck knows? So the dad thought it was strange, but just kind of brushed it off. Another time, another occasion, he ends up like cleaning, he's sweeping the floor, and then notices Talia outside, staring outside, quite distant and far away. So she's not really like paying attention, to kind of zoning out. And then all of a sudden she turns around to her and goes, "Do you remember when we were Japanese?"
Oh, she's freaking me out.
Yeah. So her dad's like, "What the fuck? Like, we're not Japanese. Or we never were Japanese, should I say."
Yeah.
He just thinks it's really strange. And apparently she kept having memories of like an old lady needing help and ended up dying. When her dad would like question her about it, she would turn around and go, "I was thinking about that little girl, the one that works and works and works and then died." But the way she described it, it sounded like an adult was speaking rather than a child, because the vocabulary was a bit more advanced compared to a child. At 4 years old, she watches her dad, Daryl, painting. He's just like got all of his paints and stuff around him. And she comes over and she basically wants to do it herself. She wants to do some painting. So her dad's like, "Yeah, sure, why not?" So she decides to paint two Japanese characters, as in...
like their language.
Yeah.
Not like Totoro and Pikachu.
I'm not going to lie, that's what I thought. And then I thought, what's so weird about her drawing like Pikachu or something? And then I realised it meant the language.
Duh.
So shame on me for being an absolute moron. So her dad like researches like, you know, the meaning behind these symbols. And it means love and home.
Oh. So
he thinks that, you know, she's sending a message to him, but is also kind of freaked out because they don't have a TV or anything in the house. And they certainly don't have like, a Japanese focused upbringing for the children. So they're a bit unsure as to where she picked this up from. And then all of a sudden they move back to the US because obviously the business that they opened didn't go to plan. So they go back. So she's 6 years old at this point and she ends up drawing a symbol, which is like a crest for a Japanese family.
Yeah.
And they just thought it was really strange. They do obviously go meet an expert in like Japanese crests, which it shows you in the documentary, and they have like a little conversation. But again, I just feel like with this story, like some parts are really fascinating, but in other parts I just feel like they just used to fill the episode in so it was long enough to make the cut. Then all of a sudden she started expressing she was extremely frightened of large buildings. So they ended up visiting an air museum, and she ended up shaking and clinging to her mum and convinced the building was going to collapse. So she felt really overwhelmed and she couldn't really like experience things like kids did, because she was so worried that the building was just going to end up collapsing.
That's another one that's really sad, isn't it?
I know, yeah. Could you imagine having that kind of fear? I mean, could you have, like, because obviously people have the fear where, like, they can't leave their house. I can't remember what the word is, but it's, like, such a bad fear.
Yeah.
Like, physically can't leave the house and they have to take medication for it to, like, calm the anxiety down.
Yeah.
Her dad watches a documentary on the atomic bomb.
Of course.
She ends up watching it with him. So the crest that I previously mentioned, I'm probably not going to pronounce this right, a command for Hiraji, probably not pronouncing that right, which is basically a holly tree, which is sacred in Japan.
Oh.
And then essentially in the documentary, they have like Japanese surnames. They tell you the meanings of what the surname is and how you pronounce it in English.
Yeah.
And the lady goes, do any of these like speak to you specifically? Does any of them jump out to you? And she ends up picking Kusano, which means grass field.
Oh.
Not that it's relevant to the story, however, just thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
And essentially, they believe that her past life was related to a woman who used to be part of a group of medics that was sent from Chatan into Hiroshima to take care of people after the atomic bomb.
Wow.
And they like in the documentary they made like the parents did make quite a jump into going, oh, she must be experiencing a past life.
Yeah.
Because obviously they didn't they didn't know where else she could have like learned any of this information from, and saying the things that she was saying. But again, they didn't really go into much detail on her. It wasn't really focused that much. It was more focused on Jamie in the episode.
Yeah. So she's given me chills though.
I just don't like kids when they say stupid shit like that. It's like, I'm trying to go to sleep. Do you mind?
Again, it like that's horrendous though. Like however much we're taking the piss a little bit, watching your child go through something, whether it's real or not, if it's terrifying, then must be so difficult.
Yeah, definitely. Like again, whenever I have kids, I don't want to have to see them go through something like that where, you know, I can't really explain it.
Yeah.
And they can't explain it. It's just happening. However, I'm not going to jump to the conclusion so quickly that, you know, they're living a past life. I'm going to think more quickly, is there something wrong, or do we need to be going to a doctor to get it checked out?
Yeah. But the bit that freaks me out the most, though, is the children drawing symbols that they shouldn't know. In one of the episodes I watched, there was another kid who they believe in the end that he had he was a Russian sniper in one of the wars, because as a kid he didn't really make friends with many people, but then when he was trying to learn his alphabet, he would repeatedly write these, they look like random symbols, and they were like, no, you need to write your alphabet, like ABC, and he was kind of like, yeah, I am, like what you want? And then they looked into it and he was writing the Russian alphabet. He was this American kid that had never met anyone Russian, barely watched anything on TV, and he was writing the full Russian alphabet. That's freaky.
Yeah.
That can't just be a coincidence, surely.
I guess with those things as well, if they're like, you know, picking up symbols, or, you know, if they already have that knowledge in their heads, then there's nothing you can really explain.
No.
There's no evidence to like support it, apart from the fact that they suddenly, you know, have the talent of being able to do ABCs, but in Russian.
Weird, isn't it?
So, yeah, that's so strange.
Noah is from a town called Centennial near Denver, Colorado in the USA. Another weird name for a town, Centennial, but we move. So Noah's mum is called Trenny. So she describes Noah as being a very free-spirited, happy-go-lucky child. He was really adventurous, stubborn, rebellious. Not going to lie, he sounded naughty, like one of those little shits. and not the fun kind of little shit, like the actual, come on now, child. Yep. So he had various speech impediments, and he struggled to pronounce a lot of words, and he was really difficult to understand unless you knew him really well. And even then, his mum quite often struggled to understand him because he couldn't say like G's or D's. Like there's those hard consonants that come from the back of your throat, like you couldn't pronounce them. When he was 3, his mum was driving him and his sister somewhere when all of a sudden he shouted, "God damn it, honey, listen to me." His mum, whose name's Trenny, she was shocked and she had to pull over because she was overcome with emotion. Noah's sister asked him why he had called their mum Honey, and he said, "Because she is Honey. She knows she's Honey." Trenny was overwhelmed with emotion. Not only had Noah said every word perfectly, which he couldn't do because of his speech impediment, but he had called her Honey. Only one person had ever called her that before in her entire life, and that was her brother Craig, who had died 5 years before Noah was born.
Oh God. Oh, I've just got chills down my spine. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Trenny wasn't sure Noah even knew she had had a brother, because like obviously Craig had died 5 years before Noah was born, so they didn't really talk about him as much anymore because time had passed. So she didn't even think that Noah knew that she had a brother, let alone that her brother had called her Honey when they were growing up. As soon as this little outburst was over, his speech impediment returned and he couldn't even remember saying it. They were watching TV one night when Noah said perfectly clearly, "That's a spy plane." Like his speech impediment completely gone just for that sentence. Yeah. When Trenny questioned him about it, he said he knew what one was because he'd been to see a black one with his daddy. So she calls up her ex-husband at this point. She calls up her ex-husband and is like, "When did you take Noah to see a spy plane?" And he's like, "What are you on about? I've never taken Noah to see any planes." She then rings her dad and says, "Why does Noah know about spy planes? Have you ever taken Noah to see a spy plane?" And he was like, "No. The only time I've ever seen a spy plane was when he was a Marine and he was based in Okinawa over in Japan. So him, his wife and Craig were there, based there for a bit. And a spy plane came onto their base and he had taken his son Craig to see the spy plane. So Trenny asked him what colour this spy plane was, and he was like, it was black. So Noah was remembering going to see a spy plane with his dad, which was actually one of his late Uncle Craig's memories. And it's not something they had a picture of in the grandparents' house, nothing like that. Like, one night when the family went out to eat, whilst they were waiting for their food, Noah stood up on his chair and said, "When I was here before I died," like,
child.
Yeah. So they asked him what he meant and why he said, "When I was here before I died," and he proceeded to describe how he had been driving. And the car had gone all wiggly and then crashed, and there had been a fire. This was the exact way that her brother had died after drunk driving on his way home from a fair.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got like major chills down my spine. I'm freaking out. And oh, God. That's
awful. Me too. How weird. One, he barely knew about her brother anyway. And two, you would not tell a kid how his uncle had died, especially not in that much detail. Would like you'd just say like a car accident or something, wouldn't you? Not anyway. So Noah's grandma does not believe her grandson is her son reincarnated or anything. Until at age 7, Noah went for a sleepover at her house. When she was tucking him into bed, he asked for his froggy, the froggy he always slept with. Now, Froggy was a stuffed animal that Craig had always slept with as a child. As Craig was growing up, and then after he died, his mum had packed it away safely. So Noah would never have seen this Froggy, never have heard of Froggy or knew what he was or what he looked like or that he belonged to Craig. And then all of a sudden, he's asking for this stuffed toy. And she's a bit shell-shocked, but she goes and digs it out. And then as soon as he sees it, his face completely lights up with recognition and is like, "There he is, there's my froggy." And then he cuddles it and goes to sleep, just like Craig would have done.
God, I can't deal with this kid.
Yeah.
I actually can't deal with him.
As a teenager, he started showing signs of having like anger issues, very similar to the ones his uncle Craig had struggled with at that age. So they were worried he was going down the same path and they didn't want like him to end up drink driving and doing the same kind of thing. So they sent him to therapy, and now his mum says he's a very well-balanced guy. And actually they interview Noah himself, and he says that he believes that he is his uncle reincarnated, and that makes him really cool and different. They all believe that he is a way for Craig to heal and live the life he never got to live before. It's another chance for Craig's soul to get a good go at a good life, which is lovely, but also corny.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the idea of the American dream.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
So, yeah, that story, there's so many moments that gave me chills. And then again, it's one of those things where at the end, I feel like they ruined it.
They made it happy.
Yeah, it's like cheesy. So that one wasn't that traumatizing compared to some of the other kids, like your Titanic boy, Jamie, and all the ones that were in war in their previous lives. But it's still.
I mean, obviously, like, some of this stuff is, like, as you say, traumatic, and, you know, you wouldn't want to see your child go through it. However, I'm very sceptical on the idea that, you know, they're remembering a past life. Like, I believe in reincarnation, like, 100%. I believe that's a possible thing. I just don't believe that we have the ability to remember anything other than what, you know, this life that we're living now.
But maybe there are some people that do get that ability.
Like, maybe, you know, some people are like more susceptible to it. And that's why, you know, you have these kids in documentaries saying that they remember shit and all this weird stuff going on.
Or like, so like those guys I said at the beginning that, so that you can remember your past lives if you previously died really unexpectedly or really violently. Like, so it was such a shock that shock carries you through to the next life. Because a lot of the kids that have got supposedly past lives of war, they actually kind of get diagnosed with PTSD as a child for a war that they've not been to or anything. So I wonder if, because it's so common for all of them to have died dramatically and unexpectedly. So I wonder if reincarnation is true, but most people just don't remember their past lives because they died peacefully or without much trauma. If you see what I mean. But then I feel like I'm not going to believe it properly unless it was happening to my own kid or to myself, because in my head, I'm like, nah, these kids have just like watched some horror films and they've got obsessed with it, or they had a random Russian book in their house, so he's learned that alphabet and he's seen that documentary on the History Channel before and knows exactly what Hitler's about to say, type of thing. There's no way of, I feel, knowing for certain unless you are that family.
Yeah, no, I completely agree as well. Like, I just think some things are really strange, and yeah, other things we can't really explain because it just happens and the kid just has that skill. I do think reincarnation is more than likely real, but I guess you won't believe it until it's you experience it yourself. Yeah. If it's you personally, or like, you know, you have a kid who goes for that.
Yeah, we are too skeptical of life in general, to be honest, to believe in it fully.
I just feel like, obviously, like, because in theory we're not that old, so we haven't really experienced that much of like life's mystery, I guess.
Yeah,
so anything could happen from now until, yeah, whenever happens.
Yeah, see what happens 10 years time. Gin and Spooks, know, the, yeah, reunion, see what's happened. So what's today's lesson?
I don't know.
Don't have kids.
Yeah. Don't have kids.
Don't let them watch the Titanic at a young age.
Oh God, please don't. I watched that at a young age.
So I think I did too.
Very traumatic film for a kid. Maybe that's probably why I got so obsessed with it, because I was like, no, I'm determined to save them all, even though, newsflash, they unfortunately are already dead.
Yeah, so it was over 100 years ago now, wasn't it?
It was 1912, I want to say. April 1912.
Before the First World War.
Yeah. Today's lesson, don't watch Titanic when you're young. Beware, kid, beware.
And if your child's got some interesting memories that could just be chalked up to imagination, don't just jump to conclusions that it's a past life.
Yeah, please at least research first.
Yeah.
Before you go, she's reliving a past life.
So please head to our Instagram, which is at Gin and Spooks, for a photo dump for everything we've talked about on this week's episode. We also have a blog, which is ginandspooks.wordpress.com, where we put all the photos as well.
If you have any scary stories or drink suggestions of your own, please email them to us at ginandspooks@gmail.com, or you can send us a message on Instagram or even Facebook. Put a message on there.
Yeah.
Gin and Spooks podcast. Is that what it is?
I think it is. We also have a Twitter, which is at Gin and Spooks Pod. So go hit us up on Twitter if you want to tweet us.
We should know this.
I know.
Doing so many episodes, we should know, our own like social media pages. However, we're just going, is that what it is?
Is that right? Is it .com? Is it? Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, thanks for listening. Bye!
Bye!